Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Good afternoon, good morning, good evening, wherever you are in the world. I am Russell Tovey.
And I'm Robert Diamond.
And this is Talk Art.
Welcome to Talk Art.
How are you today, Robert?
Today, Russell, I am feeling like I'm constantly shifting and I'm feeling like I'm in my studio, which is actually a reference to Phil Collins' terrible song.
I don't think it's terrible.
Sorry, Phil.
I love it.
I didn't mean to be rude about Phil. Didn't he have a song called Sue's Studio or something, or something like that? Anyway,
I thought he was great. I think it's iconic.
Every time I think of today's guest, I always sing that in my head. He didn't know that, but he does now. And so I'm feeling like I'm constantly shifting. And that is because today's guest work is kind of centered around that idea of constantly shifting. And for me, it means one thing, but for him, it's something very, very different, which is about shifting place. And today's guest is someone that is very dear to our heart. We've already spoken to him before for a special live talk in London, in West London. It was very fancy, but with a number of other artists. I think we had three other artists, and we didn't actually record that conversation. And afterwards, I was like, why didn't we record that? So this is a wonderful way to capture some of our previous conversation, but also go to new places. Now, our guest is also based in Margate at TKE Studios now, in the professional artist studio complex, which is connected to Tracy Emin's new art school. And we've been friends for a while now, maybe a year or so, but I was aware of his work numerous years because of so many different people. Like the amount of people that discover this artist's work and give me a call or a text going, yes, how do I meet this artist? How can I buy this artist's work? Mm-hmm. Why are you not showing this artist? Where can I see this artist? All that kind of stuff. People love your work. And the kind of themes that we're going to be discussing today are ideas surrounding difference, knowledge, visibility. He works across performance, video, painting, sculpture, even just had a whole huge installation in Miami, which was acquired by the Parish Museum. And it was an incredible installation, like a sculptural installation, which is a major moment for today's guest. So I'm very proud and excited to welcome our dear friend, Studio Lenka.
Hi, Jose. Robert and Russell. It's so nice to be here with you, especially because we were just partying at the Carl Friedman party.
On Saturday night, the Ronan McKenzie party.
Yeah,
it was wild, so
great.
So for those who don't know, your artist name is Studio Lenka, but your birth name is Jose Campos.
Yes. So I go as Studio Lenka. I wanted to position my practice as a studio because I've always worked within studios, different types of studios. I started off as a dancer when I was a child, and I sort of moved into different things. I was making video, so, you know, working with photography studios and editing suites. And so a studio is really for me a space for experimentation. And that's not really weighted to any sort of process or a specific material. I really like sort of thinking about just space. And then Lenka are some of the indigenous people of Eastern El Salvador, which is where I was born. And my mother has heritage there as well.
There's an amazing quote on your website. You're talking about where you was born and people getting asked all the time where they're from. And the first quote that comes up, it says, "When people ask me where I'm from, I never know how to answer. Born in El Salvador, growing up illegally in California, then spending my adult life in the UK. What does that question mean and why do people ask it?" Now, that's the first, when you go to your website, that's the first kind of quote of yours that comes up. Why is that so important for you? And why is that, it feels like it's quite a triggering thing to be asked where you're from to you.
Yeah, I mean, it can seem like a very sort of innocent question, but it can also be, you know, answered in many different ways. So what I think is when someone asks me that is, why are you here? Because I live in Margate, you know, and I have an American accent and I look Latino. So there's all these things that sort of make up my identity that when someone asks me that, I think, you know, what do they want to hear? And also, do I have time to go into this? You know?
I know, it's a lot, isn't it? It's a lot to sort of expect that of somebody. It's kind of a, even just on a boundaries level, it's quite exhausting in a way to constantly be having to spend your daily life like explaining.
Yeah, exactly. Like, and I wear a wedding ring as well. So people also ask me, oh, are you married? And then I have to go, well, actually, I'm gay. And, you know, so I have to explain even more about my identity. Yeah,
that's the thing being gay is that you do come out every day. The amount of times I've been in the taxi and a driver will be like, what football team do you support? I'm like, I don't really support football. And automatically they go, oh, right, okay. What do you support then? Do you like any sports? I like sports, but I'm mainly like art and, you know, drama and that. Oh, okay. And then you know that they're like, oh, you're gay. All right. Yeah, or they have to ask, you got a girlfriend? Got a wife?
I get out of the taxi door and I'm like, I'm coming out.
No, they never ask you. They know.
That's
they
a
know
song when, that I adore.
When you get in and out.
I'm going to say that reminds me, when I turned 18, the US military actually called my house phone. Literally the day I turned 18, they called my house. I don't know how they got my number. And they said, can we speak to Jose Campos? And my sister picked up and she's younger than me. She was like, he's at ballet class. And they never called again. So.
Good tip. Yeah. If you want to get out of the military. Yeah. Oh my God. So what, this is when you was 18, this is in California. So what age did you leave California and come to the UK? Because you spent most of your adult life in the UK.
Yeah, exactly. I came around 19. So I came to London, directly to London.
Why London?
Well, I met my partner and he was studying sculpture at Edinburgh College of Art. And so after a year of being apart, we sort of decided to come to London and settle there.
Amazing. And now you're in Margate. So how did Margate come onto the geography of your life?
Actually, one of our close friends, her nan used to have a hotel in Cliftonville. And for about 10 years, we were coming back and forth to Margate, and we really loved it. Actually, it really reminds me of Northern California, you know, the landscape, the wind, the sunsets. So after being in London for about 12 years, we decided to make the move to Margate. And I think that was because I needed space, I needed nature. And it's turned out really well because I've really become an artist in Margate.
Oh, that's good.
In
what way? How comes? You really feel that there?
Yeah, I really feel that because I was teaching in secondary school in Peckham. And that was like a really important thing for me. It was like a really sort of creative practice. I saw it as being an artist within a school. But just the daily life of being in London, you know, having to take the public transport and living far away from your friends, all of that. Also being able to afford a studio space. Here in Margate, I found that I could get a bigger space and I could just sort of relax and walk to the studio and really think about what I was doing.
That's amazing. So people come into your work will see a lot of figures in big hats. Now, when you was talking about the party the other night, you turned up and you had one of these big hats. And I was like, there he is. I can see you from across the room bopping incredibly well. And you had one of these hats. And I felt like, okay, so it's interesting that in your life you wear this hat. And then the characters that are appearing throughout your paintings, the narrative, they all have these hats as well. What is this hat that we're seeing?
So originally they started as a sort of folkloric dancer and a folkloric dancer that exists in El Salvador. They're called Los Historiantes, and they wear these big round hats with flowers that adorn them, patterns, bold color. And the figures sort of started there. But I became obsessed, and I just sort of started to do more and more of these paintings. And I realized what it was is I was trying to create visibility for myself. I was trying to visibly be Salvadoran, visibly be a Latin immigrant, so that other people started to connect with that. So the hats take up space as well. Physically, they take up space in a composition, but also it's kind of imagining a world where these figures do take up space, because a lot of Latinx people feel like invisible, perhaps.
And they're a way to, for you, explore masculinity. Are they autobiographical, or are they a symbol of, like you're saying, they represent a community?
It kind of shifts. I mean, at the moment, I think it's more a sort of anonymous figure. And sometimes people actually say to me, they almost look genderless as well, which I think is really interesting. But there are definite parts of me in the figures. And yeah, I love hats. Like, hats are a moment. You know, if you're wearing like a huge yellow hat, like, everyone's going to look at
That's
you.
That's so true.
There's a word I associate with your paintings, which is choreography, because I think there's so much about movement. And it really struck me when I was in your studio when you first moved to TKE, and I was kind of in the middle of it, and I felt like I was in the middle of this kind of energy stream, or like energy force, because there was just movement everywhere I looked. And when you see the paintings all installed together, even like different dimensions, because I know you make smaller ones which have frames that you often paint over, and then you have giant ones that are like, you know, five times bigger than I am even, so they're really expansive works. And it just suddenly I started to feel the dance and this kind of choreography within the room. And I remember saying it to you, and you looked really chuffed. You were like, yes. Like, and I think that recent installation as well in Miami during Basel in December, which was acquired by the Parish Museum, that also really highlighted this idea of choreography. So it's something that spreads out of your paintings into the sculptures as well.
Absolutely. I mean, it's where I come from, really, dancing. I'm really inspired by choreographers like Pina Bausch, who sort of use materials in interesting ways to talk about the human condition. I also love Trisha Brown, who uses very pedestrian movement. And sometimes I feel like when I'm in my studio, I'm sort of, like you said, Robert, caught in a moment with these figures. It's like I think her name is Lois Greenfield. She's like a dance photographer, and she shoots dancers who are just in a sort of leap, or, you know, in caught in a moment. And that's kind of what I'm trying to do, because I was a dancer and I was also undocumented at the same time. So it's kind of about the duality that exists within my own identity. It's saying that immigrants can be more than just these narratives that are, you know, part of this public discourse. They can contribute to culture. They're painters, they're dancers, they're everything.
What does it feel like to be, like you say, undocumented? And it's obviously a huge part of your identity. But when you're younger, is that something that is really like weighing down on you? Is that something you're very aware of when you are undocumented?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's like a huge part of your identity. It's sometimes I get emotional. I'm just warning you. But it means that you're not legally able to live in a place. And that affects everything. It starts to affect how you imagine your future. For example, what kind of jobs can you have? I recently did a painting that's hanging at in the TKE studios. And it's a figure with eyes all over it. And the idea for that painting is that figure has to observe everything. You know, if someone gets too close, or if they see something, because you can never rest as an undocumented person. You might get deported, you know, if you do something, or if you're too visible.
Wowee. You've said amazing things about your mother. And, you know, me and Rob love our mums. That's the reason we're here on Talk Art, Mums Rule.
Yeah.
And you've said as an artist, you reflect on your relationship to her and to labor. Mm. And because of her, you are an artist. And yeah. I'd love to talk a bit more about that.
Yeah. So when we moved to California, we were undocumented. So one of the only jobs that she could have was cleaning houses privately. And, you know, she couldn't afford childcare. So I would go along with her to help her with the houses because I was the eldest of the three. And yeah, I mean, I always sort of think that I kind of learned about another world through that process. Like, I remember coffee table books in one of these houses in particular, there was Madonna's sex book. And I just remember thinking, like, how is there a book called Sex? And like, you know, who is this woman who has all these like beautiful photographs? So it was like moments like that that really sort of challenged me and sort of like almost gave me an art education. Like, I'd see paintings on the walls or sculptures and I'd have to sort of clean around them, but also sort of like really observe them as well. So I want to credit my mother for that experience because I think that there's so many ways of becoming an artist. It's not just going to university and doing a BA, you know, so I try to include that. And I also think about making work for her specifically, because sometimes I feel people like her are not included in galleries and in institutions. And I think, what can I do to bring people like my mother along?
Well, I think you'll speak. That's exactly why we're doing this podcast, is that I always consider that when my mum listens to every episode, when she gives me a good feedback for an episode, I think, well, that's it. It's cracked it. This is the audience that you want to connect to. And it's not patronizing in any way. It's just like the fact that art is for everyone and everybody has an opportunity and deserves to be included in that. But would you say then that this time that you were cleaning these houses with your mum and these wealthy families, was that your first museum, would you say? Was that the first time you were kind of around art to that level? Can you remember what you saw?
Well, yeah, I would say that it was a sort of museum. I mean, like a private collection, you know. And it wasn't just like specific works of art that I can remember. It was like a Bergdorf Goodman catalog, shot really beautifully. It was the vases that were curated. It was the types of food that they were eating. So it was everything. It was interior design. And just being in a space, you know, and not just reading about it, but actually being in those spaces, I was like physically like transgressing these like boundaries.
Did that experience connect with any of the work that you're making now or went on to make?
I actually just made a few pieces using tablecloths, and the tablecloths are actually scrubbed with cleaning chemicals. So they look like paintings, but actually they're distressed and they're sort of starting to fall apart. And it's kind of a metaphor for the work that my mother still does and her body sort of deteriorating. But also the beauty, you know, she was doing all this hard work so that we could go to school and, you know, so that I could eventually become an artist.
For me, there's something in your work that's like the other, like, we're all different in a way, like even Russ and myself, like growing up queer, you feel different from the norm. And actually it's funny to think of like the sex book and how liberating that was for so many people around the world. But like this idea of you being in those homes where you're seeing all of these like, you know, interior design, all of that kind of stuff. And then I've seen on your kind of text about your work, your kind of mission statement, this idea of like a conservative society looking at you as some kind of like illegal alien. Mm-hmm. And I thought that word alien was so fascinating because it's kind of the view of an outsider in a sense, like someone who's kind of on the edge of society, as many people can be in so many different ways. But I was really interested in the idea of aliens also in some kind of like liberating kind of sci-fi freedom kind of element, because in being different, there's a power. Mm. And I feel like your paintings and your sculptures and your installations kind of harness that power. It's almost like a nimbleness, like a light at foot, if you could say. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like a kind
of
way of navigating the world, a way of like taking adventure and embracing it and living it and breathing it.
Yeah, you're exactly spot on. Illegal alien is a formal term that was given to me. So I had a card that said illegal alien on it. and then That's exactly right. These figures are sort of leaping in difficult situations. They have superpowers because of their difference. And I feel most comfortable on the outside because, you know, Margate isn't where I'm from, but I'm here and I have all of these sorts of lives that I've lived as a dancer, as a teacher in London, you know. So, you're right. It is a superpower and we should celebrate it like that.
Exactly. We're the chosen ones. We're the one in 10. We're the special ones. Oh, so what about fashion then for you? Because there's so many bright colors that go through all the clothing. You were saying about the one with the eyes on it just now. And people will see all these bright colors that go through the hats. And sometimes there's little cars in there.
Yeah.
These accessories. Where does the fashion come from? And are you a fashionable guy? Are you looking at clothing?
I can vouch for him, by the way. Sorry to interrupt, but he is fashionable. Okay. Every time I see him walking down the street, I'm always like, who's that? And it's always you. And you have that amazing tartan Loewe kind of bum bag. I don't even know how you describe it, like a pouch bag. Yeah, thing.
Fanny pack.
I love that.
Fanny pack. Yeah, that's me in the fanny pack. I think these figures are about joy. And to express joy, they have color and pattern. Yeah, I do take inspiration from, you know, different magazines. There's a lot of amazing portraiture in fashion photography that I sort of look to. And also like colors as well. Like I'll see what like, you know, Gucci or Loewe is doing and I'll take inspiration. I'll try to sort of understand what it is that they're trying to do with the colors that they choose to put side by side.
You started in photography, didn't you? That was kind of your first venture in dance and photography. And you're talking about these historiantes, and that became a whole body of work that you still are working through, right?
Yes. It's a constant thing. I'm obsessed with portraiture, and these historiantes, they look amazing. Like to me, they look like these beautiful, like couture creatures that I could see in a fashion editorial. But they're, you know, doing their thing in El Salvador. You know, they sort of construct these costumes with whatever they can find. They're not wealthy people. Each village has their own group of historiantes. So each kind of group has their own style. Like some wear blazers with sunglasses. Some wear big giant hats with ribbons and lace. So depending on which village you go to, like each one has their own style.
And then you created a body of work that was looking, because all the clothing you're talking about would be sourced local to where the community are.
Yeah.
And you created a sequence when you was in the UK where you got, was that?
So that's also performative to like try and collect the materials locally. There's a road in Margate called North Dun Road, which is a really great diverse community. And I love going there to gather materials. It's like my sort of, you know, art shop, I guess. I collect things like laces. I collect like doilies that I sort of like break apart and like glue onto hats and like make an amazing hat. But those materials then talk about the place that you are in. And that's what the historiantes do. So I try to sort of replicate that locally.
Amazing. We've seen as well recently, I saw a body of work and guns are appearing now. And the works like they troubled me a bit to see guns because the characters are still looking. All of your characters are making eye contact with you and they're quite neutral faced or they're smiling, they're smirking a bit. But now they've got guns in their hands. And that's something that I'd love to talk to you about because I did find that quite upsetting in some ways.
Yeah. So it's the reason why I left El Salvador. There was a civil war and I left in sort of 1989. And a lot of what was happening was young boys were being recruited as soldiers. So those paintings are referring to that moment in El Salvador's history where you'd have like a young 10-year-old with a huge machine gun, not knowing what it was that they were doing.
Wow. And have you connected to people from El Salvador who've seen your work and recognize the clothing or recognize these situations or recognize these characters in somehow?
Yes. And that's kind of been like the most amazing thing is social media is a really sort of democratic space, because a lot of people from El Salvador can't travel outside of El Salvador. So it becomes a dialogue where I sort of share my work, and then they see it, and they see somebody else on the outside, you know, making this type of work and exhibiting in different countries. And it's all to do with their culture as well. So I've had some really amazing messages, you know, people saying, I never thought I'd see like a Salvadoran artist like this. So yeah, definitely. I've definitely connected to people.
Are there famous artists from there that we should know?
I think probably the most iconic artist is Fernando Yort. He sort of created an aesthetic for El Salvador, but there are contemporary artists in El Salvador. There's a whole bunch of amazing studios. I was just there 2 weeks ago visiting studios, and I would recommend that people look at an organization called Yes Contemporary. They're a foundation that really sort of promote artists, contemporary artists that live in El Salvador and are also part of the diaspora. There's amazing, yeah, Salvadoran artists that are doing amazing things, you know, at Art Basel and you know, different museums. And yeah, it's inspiring.
But are they allowed to leave to go to these things? And are you allowed to visit and come back?
If you live inside the country, you do have to sort of apply for a visa depending on the country. So up until recently, the UK didn't require visas for Salvadoran people, but now they do. There are some countries that have agreements that you can just sort of fly back and forth. But if you go to the US, for example, if you have a show at Art Basel, you do have to hope that you do get the visa so you could go and see it.
As well as creating community through your work, I feel like you often kind of reference community, or you've actually, didn't you actually do kind of workshops with interacting with different groups of people in order to kind of bring them together and create new ideas?
Yeah, so the works that I made for, well, the installation that I made called Chisme, which means gossip in Spanish, is something that I made in Miami, and I made it alongside domestic workers, agricultural workers, people that work picking fruit, for example. That was during a residency at Fountainhead Arts in Miami. And those figures were then exhibited at Untitled, which was amazing, because Miami in that moment, as you know, turns into this like center for power. And the people that contributed to these works are actually fighting for shade, water, very basic needs. So it was nice to sort of include them in these moments. And then those figures have actually been collected by the Parish Museum, and they're going to be a part of the permanent collection.
Congratulations.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Do you sketch before you do the paintings, or do you sort of work on, do you know what it's going to be, the composition, before you start?
I don't really like sketching. I like working directly onto the canvas. I think that it's like a ballet dancer going to the bar every single morning and doing pliés. It's about how they do the pliés that day. So although it's the same thing, it's about sort of what happens in that moment. So it's not necessarily like coming up with a brand new composition. It's just about sort of tuning into how I feel and, just going for it.
Can we talk about the Vessels of Magic, which is another huge body of work that I'm obsessed with, Rob's obsessed with. We love a vessel. Yeah. And these feel like they look like they're clay, but they're the material is something different. Where did this come from, and how was that part of your practice? How often is this something that you work into?
So after I was taking pictures of Historiantes, I also wanted to reference like the Maya culture. And the fact that when a culture is erased, the things that we're left with are the artifacts and the vessels. So I started making vessels in the only way that I could at my desk, which was with paper mache. And so I made a whole bunch of paper mache vessels. And then I showed them when I went to study at Goldsmiths. And I asked the visitors to break them down, which was an interesting process because I was asking them to sort of erase this culture in a way. So that was really interesting. But that sort of research has led me to making my latest work, which is Border Vessels. And this is a collaborative project. So I went to the US-Mexican border and I dug clay from the Rio Grande, which is a border crossing for many migrants from Central America. It's funny because in Mexico, that same river is called Rio Bravo, which means angry river. And so we dug the clay and we sort of made, I say we because I worked with a ceramic studio, Clay Valley Studio, on the border. And we made 1 gallon water bottles, which is something that migrants travel with during these dangerous journeys. And so I took the vessels and I returned them to El Salvador. So I traveled with them to El Salvador, where we had a ceremony for them at a sort of a Mayan site, in a way to sort of create closure for these lives that have been crossing, you know. So yeah, it's been really a special work.
I remember sitting in your studio under the very beautiful airy light well, because you have this incredible kind of airy, bright light sunlit studio, and being close to the sculptures and being really moved by them. They have a kind of a soul to them because of the papier-mâché and because of even the shapes of them, like the one you're mentioning of that kind of water bottle. There's something really poignant about them and really emotive, and it's something so simple, but it's something that most people would just totally ignore. And I think it's such a beautiful thing to kind of turn that into an artwork, because often everyday objects become artworks. You see it all the time, but often it can be quite pop arty or whatever. But I feel like in your work, it's a really important gesture.
Yeah, I mean, this everyday, it makes me think of, like, you know, I was just thinking about this. It makes me think of like something that Pina Bausch might do. You know, she goes to like a different city and like creates a work in Rio, for example, and uses like the plastic chairs that are there, or, you know, so these sort of everyday objects that are really powerful also outside of the context, because they instantly transform you to this place. It transport you to this place, rather. And I think that's what I want to do. It's place making through the material.
Yeah, and I think atmospheres are created in your installations as well. Like, I know you've used plastic chairs yourself, but you've also had flowers and kind of very basic kind of simple single flower kind of pots.
Yeah.
Can you talk a bit about that kind of body of work?
That was an installation that I did at Quench Gallery in Margate, where I took alcohol bottles and I filled them with carnations. And then I placed 2 plastic chairs that are very typically Latin in the space. And that was kind of about being queer and creative in a Latin household, which can be very sort of machista, very sort of homophobic, and how creativity really allowed me to imagine something different, to escape that reality.
Yeah, it's interesting, that idea of childhood as well, when you grow up with kind of older siblings or like adult men in school, like teachers or your family or their friends, and that idea of like being macho. Sometimes you see kids who are like 10 years old acting like they're some big muscle man, and I see it a lot in Margate actually, because there's sort of kids going around on their bikes and stuff, and often they're walking down the street like, you know, walking the dog or something.
Bowling.
And they They've already got this kind of macho energy at the age of like 10.
Yeah.
And it's kind of even more poignant when you're thinking about things like when they're holding guns. You know what I mean? Like your description earlier, it's just devastating. This idea of like childhood and how it just gets taken away. And it can, for them, they obviously feel powerful, having felt, you know, probably subconsciously not having much power. There's something suddenly by holding a gun and feeling like I'm a man or macho at the age of 10 years old or 11 years old.
Yeah.
It's just mind-blowing.
Yeah, it is mind-blowing. I just went to get my hair cut. And when I go to a barber's, I don't know if you feel this, I feel this very sort of masculine energy when I walk in and I have to sort of sit up straight and like maybe lower my voice or something. So I totally get that vibe of macho. But I think that like portraiture and painting is also an assertion of power, if you haven't felt powerful before. Yeah.
How are you, we're talking about, you just sold a whole body of work to the Parish Museum and you've got a lot of attention. How are you navigating selling art and being an artist in demand and one that people are really starting to follow and connect with?
I don't know. I feel really grateful and humbled every day. My dog keeps me in check. I have a sausage dog, but
a sausage dog is sometimes in the paintings. Am I imagining that?
No, I should though.
Okay, I'm imagining that. Maybe I've seen
Russell's dreaming I'm of like, your okay, words when he's asleep.
Yes,
he's a witch.
I am a witch.
He's like
I'm a sausage witch. They call me.
Wait, so it's interesting. I wanted to ask you about the success because you've had kind of success rising over the last few years. I've seen you being written about. You're on the front cover of Scene magazine, even here locally, and you've participated in Soho House promotions and all kinds of things, but I noticed in your studio, you've actually kept back a lot of the early work for yourself. And I was kept asking you, what was that on the top of your cabinets or cupboards or something? You had all these little paintings.
Yeah.
Can you talk about those little paintings? Because I absolutely love them.
They're tiny sort of A4 paintings. And I started making them when I only had a desk. So that's why they're so small. And I was really trying to find my style. And for a long time, I didn't show them to anyone because I thought they were hideous. But now that I've started working much more, I really sort of keep them almost like an amulet or a charm in the studio because it's kind of like, remember where you came from. I mean, not that I've gone anywhere, but, you know, that style, like, where does the style come from? And that's why I sort of hold on to them.
And these are like portraits, aren't they? They're kind of like the heads, the faces of you, perhaps.
Yeah, they're me trying to figure out how to paint. Portraiture. And they always have these hats, so it's a learning process that's really evident in these paintings.
And the thing is, since that point they have really developed, the painting styles become much more fluid. And also you started to like go to flea markets and kind of find frames. And you've got some really ornate ones and really expensive ones that you've either found very affordably or you've actually invested
in. Yes, I love finding frames. Like sometimes a frame just like really speaks to me. I was just at the National Gallery like 2 days ago. And I was just staring at all the frames. They're incredible. They're like sculptures. Like, and the more important the painting, like the more massive and gold the frame is. It's crazy. But I like to collect these frames and then paint over them almost in a way to sort of defy them. And these figures are, you know, put into these frames and they sort of bleed across these borders. And I've said this to both of you that they're European borders, actually. So it's about making this history a bit more messy, a bit more entangled, and a bit more sort of, in my mind, bodily, more bodily.
Wow. So the border of the frame, in some ways, is a metaphor for borders within countries and the borders for immigration. So, wow. And you're bleeding over the borders with these figures.
Yes, and history as well. I mean, especially in art, it's presented to us in a very specific way, but very neat. So, you know, when we think about that, it's a bit messier.
I also think about time points with them because they're often vintage frames or they've been used for a completely different purpose. And I think there's something really beautiful about time in your work, like this kind of shifting time perspective.
Yeah, I love that because I always leave the labels on. I don't try to make it look like a newer frame. I really love to see like where the frame has come from, Belgium, Paris, London, and that, and then to have a sort of Salvadoran figure on it who's queer maybe is like really interesting.
Yeah, it's kind of subversive.
What's the most you've spent on a frame?
Oh God, I've spent, I think this is a lot, like £300 for a frame, just the frame.
Yeah. And you've worked on that one already?
Yeah, I have. Yeah, I feel quite naughty like painting over it because it's a, like a beautiful antique frame. But then I have to remember like what I'm trying to do.
And when it comes to pricing then, if you have a frame that's say £2 from a charity shop or you have this £300 frame, does that, and they're the same size, does that affect how you price the work for collectors?
I've never had that situation, but I would imagine that it would, you know, just the cost of the frame.
Yeah, almost like a production cost.
Yeah.
When I was in your studio, we had a really fascinating conversation about language, and we were talking about Latinx artists and visibility and how few Latinx artists are discussed in even the UK or American contemporary art worlds. And even though it's shifting, it's still a huge kind of something that's missing, quite radically missing.
Yeah.
And we spoke about the language though, and the actual term Latinx, because I was really interested in it. And you were talking about how it's currently evolving. And there's all these discussions and kind of symposiums and people around the world, you know, debating it fiercely. Can you speak a bit about that briefly, just because I found it so interesting?
Yeah. So in Spanish, you say Latino or Latina, and that's very gendered. So the term Latinx, I think, sort of started to include different forms of gender expression. And it's now evolved into the X, meaning that actually it's to do with the US. So positioning your identity within the US. So for example, if like me, you are Salvadoran, but you grew up undocumented in the US, that's different than being just Salvadoran in El Salvador. So there's a certain privilege that comes with being a citizen of the country that you were born in. And the term is sort of, some people like it and some people don't like it. Like, for example, my mother, I don't know if she would be able to say Latinx because in Spanish it's X and she doesn't speak very much English. So some people argue that it's a term that maybe academics in the US have created rather than the people themselves. But saying that, I use it because it's kind of like currency. It's something that curators or institutions understand. So it's useful to sort of trade with that kind of language.
Yeah. And then the new term is Latine.
Yes, Latine. Yes, that's right.
Which is easier to pronounce if you come from a Spanish kind of background of education or speaking.
Yes, that's right. So, it's easier to say in Spanish, Latinx.
Because it's almost like the idea of Latinx kind of excludes people who it's referring to or something. It's a really fascinating concept.
Yeah, it's constantly evolving.
Maybe it's too heavy for right now, but I just wanted to mention it because I thought it was really interesting.
Yeah.
What is the materials you use? What paint brands, and is it acrylic? Is it oil?
Well, I'm kind of self-taught because I came through like dancing and then photography and then sculpture. So I just sort of started working with whatever I had. And now that's evolved to where the faces that I paint are in oil. And I really love Winsor & Newton. And then the bodies are usually in acrylic. And I love acrylic because it dries quickly. And then, you know, you can work on top with different layers. And lots of different colors all at once. You don't have to wait ages.
So we're talking to you from Tracy Emmons Art Studios in Margate. What is it like being at these studios? And they're brand new for everybody listening who don't know. They only opened this year officially, really. How long are you planning to be in there and what is the experience like?
It's incredible to be here. I applied not thinking I would get a space. And then I got invited to come have a tour with Tracy herself. She showed me the space and I just thought, oh my gosh, this is like a dream. And I keep thinking that every single day. Every time I walk in, like, the light is just incredible. It has these amazing sort of skylights and everything is white. She's been really generous in how she sort of set up the space. There's a lot of care. And it just means that as an artist, you can just be an artist. You don't have to worry about being cold. You don't have to worry about, you know, locking the doors, and, you know, someone coming in to, like, because in my previous studio, people were always coming in off the street. So I don't have to worry about that. You can just be an artist. And there's a community here as well. There's several artists and we get together for coffee and, you know, we're getting to know each other's practices. It's a real community.
Because artist studios and being cold seem to be a trend, thing. It's a real thing.
Yeah, definitely.
Why?
I think artists always move into spaces that are, like, unseen or not cared for. And then, you know, they become these amazing artist studios. And then people think, oh, let's turn those into flats.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah.
That's interesting. So what is the dream? What is next for you? But what also is the dream venue to exhibit in?
Oh, my gosh. Well, I'm working on a show for Tang Contemporary, and that's going to be in July. And that's actually going to be in Bangkok. I'm going to go there. So that's going to be really interesting. And I don't know, like, where would I like to exhibit next? I think for the border vessels that I just made, I think ethically they should be a part of a public collection, not in a private collection, just to tell that story. So maybe a public institution in the UK. Yeah.
Lovely. Jose, we're going to get into our final questions now. This has been wonderful. You are so cool. The first question is, if you could do an art heist, you could have any work of art in the world for yourself, you could steal it and me and Rob will help you, what would it be and why?
Oh my gosh. When you started saying that, I immediately thought of a whole ballet. Can I steal a ballet?
Yes, you can. Yeah. That's lovely.
I might steal a classic, which is the Nutcracker. And that sounds really sort of Christmassy and cute, but it's not. It's an incredible piece of work. The music, the costume design, the set design, maybe the Royal Ballet's version of the Nutcracker.
Do you go and see it every year? Is it like a tradition for you?
I used to when I was younger, not anymore. But I always listen to the music. I was in it as well. So it reminds me of, like, when I, you know, the steps, like, I can, when I hear the music, I can, like, picture the steps.
Is there a sadness to your dance career not being the career that you're in now?
There was a moment where I was sort of sad that didn't happen, because dancing is very much about having, like, the perfect body for it. And that was kind of like a language. When I stopped dancing, that was kind of like not being able to speak a language. But actually, I turned into becoming a visual artist. So that is the same part of my brain. Painting and dancing is all the same kind of language.
Yeah, and I think dancing is just about as much as looking as feeling, isn't it, in a way? Because you spend so much time in the mirror.
Yeah.
I just remember from being a kid doing ballet, and you spend so much time having to reflect back on the self that in a weird way, it's a perfect training.
Yeah.
For visual art.
You learn about space and line and tone and texture through your body, you know.
Mm. What snacks do you have at the studio? I don't know why I'm asking you this, but I think I remember seeing fun snacks when I was in the studio last
fun time. Snacks in the studio. I mean,
what do you eat to fuel yourself? Yeah. In order to keep going.
I'm more coffee.
Do you have any rituals?
I'm always drinking coffee in the studio. There's a coffee machine downstairs and it's really good, but there's always exciting things happening here at TKE. Like, we'll literally get a text saying, like, so and so's coming around, and everyone gets, like, really excited and, like, opens up their studios. That happens, like, every other day, basically.
Yeah, you've had Andreas Krontaler from Vivienne Westwood. He's her widow and the head of Vivienne Westwood Design. He came round.
Yinka Ilori came round, didn't he?
Yinka Ilori came round. You actually weren't there that day, but we did pop into your studio, and he was a massive fan of yours, and I think you've since connected. I love Yinka. And I even gave a talk to the students there, the other half of the complex.
Yeah.
Yes, Rob.
A very impassioned 2-hour conversation.
Legend.
Yeah. And apparently, do you know what? Apparently, after my talk, they all cancelled what they were supposed to be doing in the afternoon.
Cancelled their studios.
No. So they could all paint and draw because they were so like empowered by what I was saying. That's so brilliant. Tracy was really, really impressed. The other question is, what is your favorite color?
I'm going to say yellow.
Oh,
yeah. I'm using a lot of yellow and it's such a positive color.
Sunshine, like right now.
Yes. And bananas.
What do the little cars mean when they appear in your work?
I usually paint Toyota trucks because in El Salvador, like people use Toyota trucks for everything. So when I used to go as a child, like they'd pick us up and we'd from the airport and we'd have to be in the back of a Toyota truck. But also like the police uses the back of a Toyota truck. Like it's just used for everything. It's like it's like a symbol for El Salvador.
So when you said yellow and bananas, yeah. Are there sort of evocative memories to do with the color yellow for you?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, actually, I think of plantain, like bright yellow plantain. They grow naturally everywhere in El Salvador.
Amazing. What is the best advice you have ever received when it comes to your art?
The best advice that I used to have a teacher. He's still working as a teacher. His name is Alonzo King, and he's this amazing choreographer in San Francisco. And he used to shout, "Don't dance" in rehearsals. Don't dance. And what he meant was, you know, be it, like, don't go through the steps and, you know, do what I've just taught you or told you to do, like just be it. And I think I really sort of try to do that with my practice now.
So don't paint.
Don't just paint. Yeah.
Be the painting.
Yeah. I mean, what is it to paint? You know, like, what does it mean to be an artist? Well, that's a bigger discussion.
Do you know?
That's a whole
do you
other
know?
Podcast.
Do you know what it is to be an artist?
What is your word of wisdom?
It's being alive and responding to life. It's including people and having conversations with them.
Oh. Love you, Jose.
You know, when you sign your paintings, you've got such a beautiful handwriting and it's almost like a deliberate font or something that you sort of created for the paintings. Is writing poetry important to you? And how did that font appear in your paintings?
I sign my paintings and I sign them slowly because of the material, the thickness of the paint. So I really have to sort of like focus on how I produce each letter, and that actually creates that aesthetic. Because if I tried to sign it differently, it would just be harder. So it's about that material asking me to sign the painting slowly.
That's so weird. It's so purposeful. Mm. That means if it's signed, it's a work.
Yeah.
At least everybody knows, like, that's a finished Studio Lenka
yes,
work.
Yes, exactly.
Because you had to really make an effort to sign
it. You sign it Lenka, don't you?
Yeah, Studio Lenka, yeah.
Well, Jose Campos, Studio Lenka, this has been incredible. Thank you so much for being with us today on Talk Art. For everyone listening.
Yeah, the second time we've interviewed
you.
It's not going to be the last time. I feel like we're on the cusp.
All again.
You're on the cusp of something, and I feel like we're going to keep talking.
Like, I feel like you're going to put some music on now. Do you listen to music in the
I
studio?
Do. I love, different types of music, especially
the Nutcracker. You're going to put the Nutcracker on when you get off.
I can't believe I said the Nutcracker. It's not even Christmas. But like Latin music, it like really puts me in like a different...
Like what though? Like which singers or bands?
I really love Lido Pimienta. She's an amazing singer. And there's a sort of like magical realism quality to her. And she sort of like looks like a goddess as well. Like she like... Yeah, it's amazing.
Wow, I need her in my life. Well, for everyone listening, you can also Google that artist and you can Google Studio Lenka. And what's your Instagram?
@ Studio Lenka.
Very on brand. We love that. Direct. Well, for everyone listening, do go to @ Talkart and we'll be posting images of Jose's work. Jose, we adore you. I think this is just the beginning of a very beautiful friendship. I know it's been a few years and I remember seeing that painting of yours at Turner Contemporary in Margate in that group show. And I was just blown away by them. And there's something when you stand in front of your paintings, because on Instagram they become something else. I think they almost have a life of their own, but the actual physical paintings are just so extraordinary. So please keep doing what you're doing. You're making the world a better place, and we'll be back very soon. Thanks for listening.
Thank you, Jose.
Thank you.
Bye.
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 You've been listening to Talk Art with Robert Diamond and Russell Tovey.
Follow us on Instagram at Talk Art, where you can view images of all artworks discussed in today's episode, with music by Jack Northover.
Subscribe to Talk Art at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Acast, or wherever it is that you get your podcasts.
Give us a rating and write us a comment. Thanks for listening.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.